The Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA is broadcasting live from Keenan's in North Wildwood and is brought to you in part by SEPTA, BCWSA, Rob's Automotive, Vince Sirianni in Contour Mortgage, Marriott Suites in Clearwater Beach, Harris Comfort, Penn Community Bank, McCaffrey Supermarkets, Peruzzi Auto Group, Keenan's in North Wildwood, and the Southern Ocean County Chamber of Commerce. We now go live to Keenan's in North Wildwood for the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. Now, here are your hosts, Paul Jolovitz and Ricky Vitalico.
Thank you very much, Bob Giaquinto, and welcome to beautiful Keenan's in North Wildwood on a gorgeous, beautiful summer day. I'm Paul Jolovitz in for John Brazier, along with Ricky Bowe on the Baseball Insiders presented by SEPTA. We're going to take you around baseball, concentrating on the Phillies for the next hour as they set up for their final in Colorado today. Phillies trying to avoid being swept for the second series in a row after being swept by Anaheim, Ricky Bowe.
Yeah.
They've lost five in a row, and all that momentum winning five in a row last Sunday sounds like a distant memory now, doesn't it?
It is a distant memory. I mean, think about this for a second. You look at the runners in scoring position, because that's the thing that points to me every single game that they lose. It's not good. Now, you look at where they were. They're in Philadelphia playing against the Atlanta Braves last time. And the Atlanta Braves are not a good ball club.
No.
And certainly not a good pitching staff. So you put those two things together, a small ballpark, a good hitter's park, and bad pitching going against, you're going to hit the baseball. And you know what? You had Aaron Nola going well. Eichhoff was doing all right. Now all of a sudden, Nola pitched well in his first game on this trip. He didn't win, but he pitched well. And then you look at the rest of the guys. It's kind of been a downfall again. And it's hard to. I'm not going to throw those guys under the bus because they're young. But still, I mean, I get pitching in Colorado, but you just had the Anaheim Angels. I really LA Angels. I believe that that's a pitchable team. I mean, besides a Mike Trout, I mean, you made big mistakes to a guy like Albert Pujols, who's hitting, what, 225?
Yeah, still can jack the long ball. And today they have, obviously, a Rocky team that, in addition to being in Coors Field, which is a launching pad of all launching pads, the Rockies are a wild card team headed for a 90-win season. They weren't in the same division with the Dodgers. We'd be hearing a lot more about them.
Yeah.
Last night, Nick Pivetta threw batting practice for 2 2/3 innings. Before we get to Mark Leiter, Ricky, is it me or do I turn? It seems like I turn on Phillies games in the second inning a lot, and they're always behind.
Always behind.
Did you? I mean, you were a reliever, but you were a starter in the minors. So many people, so many pitchers, and it seemed like all the Phillies pitchers have trouble getting out of the blocks in the first inning. Is there any way around that? Change your routine, do this, do that, or what is it?
Quite frankly, I think there's a fear. These guys have a fear of going in there and actually giving up the runs. And when your mind takes over, that's exactly what happens. I mean, you've been around the sport enough. When you have a guy that doesn't have confidence, and let's face it, besides Aaron Nola, is there really a big confidence-building guy on that pitching staff right now? No, not really. And what you have is guys going out there and trying to will their way through instead of pitching their way through. You can't do that. You have to execute pitches the second you come out of the bullpen.
Well, Jamie Moyer, pitched forever.
Right.
He told me later in his career, we'd be sitting in his locker and he'd say he'd had that problem once. We give runs like 11 first innings in a row.
Yep.
He'd go in the bullpen and threw two innings like he was pitching,
and try to
simulate it and fool the baseball gods.
I get what Jamie was trying to do. But I don't actually think that could be simulated.
I mean,
you're just trying to wear your arm down a little bit. If you're a sinker ball pitcher, I get it. But if you're a power type pitcher, I don't think you could really do that. I think the one thing that you have to do is know your opponents, and I think that's one thing that I don't believe these guys they don't sponge it in. I really think it hits the brain and kind of bounces around in there until they get rid of that freeze, the duck or deer in the headlights look. You can't do that. You have to go out there, execute your pitches, and go out and be aggressive. I think we're seeing passive pitching early on. You watching games, you don't feel like these guys are like, oh, please don't hit this pitch or please. You can't be like that. You have to be like, I'm going to throw it through the catcher's mitt. I feel like there's a lot of throwing to the catcher's mitt. That's and quite frankly, if you're a little leaguer out there, the one thing that you should do as a pitcher is throw through the mitt, not to it.
Very interesting way to look at things. And we're going to get you ready for Phillies baseball Coors Field at 3:10.
Yep.
We'll be here till about 2:30 analyzing this one. And at Coors Field, Rick, you mentioned that your curveball wouldn't curve, the ball, that's a huge ballpark. Our ballpark is a runs ballpark. Small outfield, short fences.
Right.
They got deep fences, but the ball carries forever. You see a Nick Williams playing there for his first time, confused yesterday a lot.
Yeah, the biggest problem at Coors that I used to remember, because you know what I did a lot? I shagged fly balls a lot during batting practice, and I got a lot of running in there because I wanted to get a feel for what the outfielders are seeing.
Oh, at Coors?
And at Coors, it's tough because, number one, the outfield has to play deeper than normal, okay? And I'll say this every single time. It's not the home runs at Coors that will kill you. It's the fly balls that drop in front of the outfielders because they have to play so deep.
Well, we've seen the last 2 days, not quite that, but Michael Franco, first triple of the year, yep. Although it was an error. But
and he's slow as molasses.
Very slow. And last night, Daniel Nava got his first triple since 2010. Last night, though, Ricky, we saw something that if I just read it off the sheet ordinarily, you'd say, well, that's terrific because he was a starting pitcher in the minor leagues, and Mark Leiter went 4 1/3 innings, gave up 2 hits, no runs or walks, struck out 9. If I told you that, you'd wonder, well, why'd they take him out? Well, they took him out because there was a pinch hitter needed,
right,
as they were down 8-0. He didn't start the game. The most strikeouts by a Phillies reliever in 51 years by Mark Leiter with that great stuff at Coors Field. I love the way he knows what he's doing on the mound. Wish he had better stuff, but terrific last night.
Yeah, he was. You know, the one thing about Coors Field, power pitchers have a really hard problem. I had a problem there, especially early on in my career. Later on in my career, I was fine. But when you're a power pitcher and you kind of rely on your fastball, it doesn't have that movement. It doesn't have that jump. It doesn't have the sink on it. You don't get anything on it, really. So you're
then
really
why were you fine later in your career? Did you find something?
Because I didn't throw as hard, and I threw a lot more two-seamers and a lot more sliders, which kind of helped out there. I will say this much. Leiter's curveball was pretty good yesterday. We agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Spotted it well.
And I'll tell you what, he throws a soft curveball, which makes it easier to throw out in Colorado. For me, I had more of a jetting curveball, so I didn't get that break. I just got the little I would call them cement mixer spins that you really – so the one thing I tried to do later on is throw the curveball lower in the zone, start it lower in the zone, so almost dropping your shoulder a little bit, which isn't a great thing. But you try to do that so you get the break and at least it's down in the zone instead of up.
Well, that's
but Leiter was tremendous.
A terrific point you made. Because I don't remember who said this back in the day. That we've heard the humidors and everything they tried in Coors Field.
Yep.
He goes, my 12-6 curveball here is 12-12.
Yeah.
And when you hang every pitch you throw, that's usually the formula for instant disaster. Which it was last night for Nick Pivetta. Every pitcher gets his education at Coors, and sometimes more than once, and Nick got his last night. I wanted to ask you today especially, there's a term in Major League Baseball that's used in a couple different ways. One is for a starting pitcher who, when his team is going badly, can turn that around. It's called a stopper.
Yeah.
Aaron Nola has pitched very well this year. I was skeptical of him that he was hurt. He's on a really nice stretch now where he's, you know, 6-7 innings, 1 or 2 runs, his ERA is under 2, his last 7 starts. He's got to be the stopper for the Phillies today. He's pitching at Coors Field. Does he feel that pressure? What kind of that is on him today? And how big a game is this for Aaron Nola? Although the Phillies are 39-69, lost 5 in a row, this to me is an opportunity.
I don't think he feels the pressure of being a stopper because what are you really stopping? I mean, you know, your team's really not going anywhere.
No.
So it's not a stopper situation. I think what I see right now is a situation where he just wants to go out and pitch, not only for himself, but obviously for the team at this point. He's not going to change anything. I don't think he's going to go out there with the thought process, if I don't do this and I don't do that, we're in trouble. No, you have to go out and pitch your game, and that's how you become a stopper. You don't become a stopper just because you say, I'm going to go out there and stop this team. You become the stopper because you go out there and perform on days when they need you to perform. Now, like I said, the Phillies aren't going anywhere, but to get out of a 5-game losing streak would be nice. And, yes, there is probably a little bit added pressure on Aaron today, but he knows if he goes out and pitches the way he has been, he's probably going to get a win today. And I will say he's as close to a automatic good game as anybody else on this ball club.
Jeff Hoffman, his opponent for the Rockies today, who started well, has been pitching lousy lately. And give you one more thing. We're on WBCB-TV today, as we'd like to be with streaming video. You can listen to us or watch us on the Internet. Chris Giaquinto is in charge of all that today. And, Rick, we have a little team here that's watching us. They just played their ball down at Cape May, the Del Valle Senators. Hi, guys. How are you?
There they are.
Ready to go. Well,
no doubleheader today, apparently.
That's true. Why didn't you play a doubleheader? You could lose just like the Phillies did five in a row, right? You could lose to the Rockies.
Keep it going.
That's right. Who's the best player on your team?
Raise your hand.
Nobody.
Nope. Nice. Team player right there. You see that? He said nobody. That's a team player.
Nobody is right. Phillies, think about that as well. I mean, obviously a period of flux, Ricky, with calling people up and down. Last night we saw Jorge Alfaro for the first time this year. He got two hits in 16 trips last year, two and four trips last night. What are the Phillies looking for from him? Is he a stopgap? That's true.
Defense. I mean, quite frankly, I think that's more than anything. They want to see him play a good, solid defense and call a good game. But I don't think the Phillies catchers right now are actually calling the games. I think it's coming from the dugout.
Do you?
I do right now.
Why would that be?
Why not? I mean, we saw what Rupp and Knapp were doing early in the season. There was obvious some dissension between the pitchers and the catchers. So what do? You have somebody from the dugout, usually the bench coach calling the pitches. I wouldn't say every pitch because, you know, sometimes it's very simple. You put a glove up and you throw that fastball and move on.
Right.
But, I mean, I think with Jorge Alfaro, I think that's more what you want to learn from him. I think you want to move him into that role where he's calling every pitch and see if he can handle the pitching staff. I mean, he's a big boy. He's got a cannon of an arm. It's just all about receiving for him. His hitting will come along.
He played last night. Of course, Cameron Perkins also back. Zaren Altair, who's in a little bit of a slump himself now, but he's been playing well for quite a long time.
I think he's been battling that hamstring for a lot longer than we think.
And that's something that I don't see that going away till next year.
No. You know what? That's another reason. It's going to be a very careful touch and go with him all the rest of the season. What is there to prove? He's proved he could play at the big league level. I think we both agree on that. He definitely is probably the best outfielder the Phillies have by far defensively.
Well, Williams is pretty good. I've seen so far. Good arm, at least. Maybe not.
He has, you know what? You know what Williams did, and I think he came up to the big league level thinking, "I'm going to be a baseball player. I'm not going to be a one dimensional guy. I'm going to go up there and make sure I'm thinking through what could happen on each play because that's what I've seen from him. I mean, he's made some plays from the outfield that you're like, wow, he's ahead of the game, which I think is a big positive. But it always kind of plays itself out, and I think he's a hustler. He's playing good defense. And he's a step ahead of things. And he's playing pretty well on offense. I mean, he had that one little slump where the pitchers, it seemed as though they got into a mode of changing up on him, a lot of change-ups, a lot of off-speed pitches early. Now he's kind of quieted that because he has hit those pitches. So, I mean, it's all about adjustments. You know that? And he's adjusted well here in a recent week.
Look good. He's in the top five in the majors in RBI since the All-Star break. This is the Baseball Insider brought to you by SEPTA. We're here at Keenan's beautiful place in North Wildwood. Eat, drink, be merry. Come on down here. A lot of kids are here. People are here on a Sunday afternoon. We'll be right back with the Baseball Insiders, Jolly and Ricky Bowe, right after this.
We now return to Keenan's in North Wildwood for the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. Now, here are your hosts, Paul Jolovitz and Ricky Batalico.
Thank you very much, Bob Giaquino. We're at the beautiful Keenan's in North Wildwood. A little short trip for me, Ricky Bo, about 8 miles. We have a summer house in Avalon.
About 78.
Yeah, a little beach traffic coming down for you?
It wasn't too bad coming down. I have a feeling it's not going to be too good going back.
You're rooting for good weather, which is smart because people stay at the beach longer when the weather's better.
I'll tell you what. When I was driving here, it was cloudy pretty much the whole way. I got about 10 miles from here, and the sun was out. Beautiful day. So hopefully it went up the coast.
Hopefully it will. Rained a little last night at Coors. Looks like it should be okay today. And the Rockies, who are in the thick of things, not necessarily for the division championship in the West, but the wild card race, they and the Diamondbacks are significantly ahead of the Brewers as we head into August. They have a lineup that just doesn't stop. You mentioned there's no open spaces, no empty spots. Arenado already at about 100 RBIs. It's August 6th. It's ridiculous. Trevor Story, their shortstop, having a terrible year, but everybody else, Charlie Blackman, Carlos Gonzalez, not having a great year, but he kills the Phillies. It's a heck of a lineup.
You know, I looked at the lineup today, and they are not pulling any punches, the Rockies. They're looking to finish this thing off with a sweep. It's Blackman, LeMahieu, Arenado, Parra, Reynolds, Gonzalez, Story, Hannigan, and Jeff Hoffman's doing the pitching. But, I mean, that's a team that is not looking to take their foot off the gas pedal, that's for sure. And it's a Phillies team that, hey, they know it's Aaron Nola, but they know they need wins. There are no days off for that team.
How often did a pitching coach come out to you, which Bob McClure did Friday night, and decide whether to walk LeMahieu to get to Blackman? LeMahieu, folks, in case you're not aware, may not be the biggest name on the market. He did something last year that it's called, he won the National League batting title.
Yeah.
And you walked him to get to Charlie Blackmon.
I couldn't do it because, quite frankly, you look at Blackmon, man, that guy has killed the Phillies.
He sure has.
He came in here earlier. He came into Philly earlier in the season, and it was like he was taking batting practice for the full series. So I would never, never walk anybody to get to him.
Where does Arenado fit in your top 10 in baseball? He's, to me, obviously one of the top 10 players in baseball.
I would say top five.
Top five?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think he's a good ball player. I think he does everything right.
Great,
you know,
defensive ball
player. He's unbelievably defensively. And, you know, a lot of people get on me because I put defense into a good ball player
all
the time. Absolutely. I think most people look at it and just go offense. I think Arenado is a top five player without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Where do you put Altuve?
Probably two or three.
Trout's one.
Probably – I think he's very close with a guy like Harper. I mean, but look at his batting averages. And it's not one year. It's every year. This guy comes out and pounds the baseball, and he does everything. He's another guy who does everything well. I think Bryce Harper at times, at times during the season, I think people look at Harper as just a home run guy.
Yep.
But at other times, you look at him, and, you know, he doesn't do much. And when you look at the lineups, I mean – Houston's been without Correa. They've been without Springer. Altuve has continued to do it.
And he's 5'5". He never takes a day off because he was never that guy. Harper, Mr. Blue Chip, Sports Illustrated, when he was 16. Altuve is the guy that, well, you're too small, you're too small. And every day he's trying to show me. He hits for power. He's a Gold Glove second baseman. He's got speed, steals bases, hits 360. Not bad.
How about taking Murphy and Zimmerman out of the lineup for an extended period of time? What does that do to Harper?
A lot, I think.
Right. One. I don't think that makes him an Altuve type player. Altuve's more of a contact hitter, but he hits the ball hard. He hits the ball on the line.
Sure does.
I think he's a really good player, but I would put those three in the top three. And quite frankly, I guess I would put Arenado fourth.
Well, Arenado has something that he does.
And I'm deleting pitchers from this.
Oh, yeah. No.
I obviously think Clayton Kershaw is.
He's unbelievable.
He is my favorite player to watch at the big league level.
But he has to learn how to do it in the playoffs, which he hasn't yet. But, boy, when he's on, Ricky Bo, you as a pitcher.
Unhittable.
It's like watching a symphony orchestra, isn't it?
You know what I love about him? When he gets the ball back, he knows what he's throwing. He knows his next pitch.
He calls his own game?
He knows his next pitch. He never, doesn't necessarily call his own game, but if he sees something he doesn't like, he shakes it off and goes. But I've also heard him in interviews say, like people would say, your tempo is really quick out there, really quick out there. He says, well, I have an idea of what I want to do, and even if my catcher calls something else, I throw it with conviction, and that's the bottom line.
You know, Clayton Kershaw's high school may wind up with, well, they will wind up if he keeps going, with a Hall of Fame pitcher, but also a Hall of Fame quarterback. Do you know who that's going to be?
No.
Drew Brees.
Really?
Not bad for a high schooler, is it?
Not bad. Two around the same. They were probably in school, a little bit off.
2 years apart. Yeah. Brees a little older. I'll tell you another thing that's not bad. You see Arenado with almost 100 RBIs on August 6th. You're wondering, how's that? Guys in front of him get on base, but no more than the Astros or a couple other guys do. How about 431? You talk about RISP, runners in scoring position.
That's unreal.
431 for the season.
What's the league average, 260?
Got to be 270, something like that, 260.
Somewhere in that area at the most.
You hit 431 with men on base, you're going to get a lot of RBIs. And when you look at the Rockies, Ricky, we'll go back to the Phillies in a second, but this is a team that for years – you know, it's hard to get a free agent pitcher to sign there. Rookies come up and they get pounded and lose their confidence. What's different about the Rockies this year that has them where they are as opposed to the last bunch?
Well, if you look at the pitchers, they still get beat up a little bit. But, I mean, I think, you know, when you learn that your ERA is not going to be a 3 at Coors Field, it's just not. If you learn that you keep it under a 5, you're in good shape at that ballpark. And when you pitch there more, you get a better feel of actually what you're doing at that park. So I really believe when you're a home team guy at that stadium, you're in much better shape than coming in as a visitor because you don't know exactly how to pitch there.
And you play 80 on the road, too.
Yeah, you guess. So, I mean, it's all about, you know, really keeping the ball down there and getting a feel for where you could have the ball hit that's going to be an out.
Well, there's a guy hitting for the Phillies. It's taking the cover off the ball in AAA, hitting home runs, playing defense, named Rhys Hoskins.
Yeah.
Look into that crystal ball of yours and give me a date in which this righty-righty Joseph Hoskins platoon starts. When do we see Rhys at this level?
I'm going to say within the next 3 weeks.
I'm not going to wait till September.
They may wait till September 1st, but they want to get him 150 at-bats. They're not going to do that It's September 1st. I would think a couple weeks you may see some changes.
See Dylan Cousins at all, Carlos Tochi?
You know, I almost feel like the Phillies are waiting for somebody to go on DL.
Like Caesar?
Anybody. Just so they could bring him up and see what happens. I mean, you have Kingery, you have Hoskins waiting, one of those guys. Who knows? I mean, any little tweak that you hear of a Hernandez or a – well, I'm not even sure about Hernandez because I'm not so sure they're in a hurry for Kingery. But I think they're starting to be in that little hurry for Hoskins.
Let me ask you this. A couple weeks ago, Scott Kingery was promoted to AAA, and he started taking some ground balls at third base right around the time Michael Franco was hitting way below the Mendoza line for an extended stretch. Was Scott Kingery taking ground balls at third base, as the Phillies said, just to get versatile and be able to do more than one thing? Or was that a direct something at Michael Franco?
Well, you have to ask yourself, do you look at Kingery as a everyday player at a position, or do you look at him as an everyday or a bench player?
I look at him
as an everyday right now.
Yeah.
Right now you have to project him. I'm talking project him. Where do you project him as an everyday player, right?
Yeah.
Well, then I don't really buy into they're just letting him see third base.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, he's hit at every level he's at. He's hit AAA. He's not. What's the technicality? I about the 40-man roster. He doesn't need to be in the 40-man roster.
He doesn't need to be on there, and the Phillies are right up against it. As you say, we're up against a break. Yeah, they're right up against that with him. So I think it could end up being a technicality that, you know, it's not time, it's not the place to bring him up. I know a lot of teams really don't care about that anymore, but it is what it is. I mean, if you have to bring him up or you want to bring him up, you do it. But, you know, if you're going to save a little bit of money in the long run, I don't think we'll see him until next year.
All right, we'll save a little bit of money by giving you a commercial break, and hopefully you'll spend some of our advertising dollars. We'll be back. We're going to talk about Pete Rose, Alumni Weekend, or the lack thereof. The Phillies go to Atlanta. Look at the Phillies in depth. Baseball Insider, presented by SEPTA, continues from Keenan's in beautiful North Wildwood. Come on down. Get something to eat. Get something to drink. It's a great place, and we're back right after this.
We now return to Keenan's in North Wildwood for the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA. Now, here are your hosts, Paul Jolovitz and Ricky Batalico.
Back at the Baseball Insider, this is WBCB Levittown. Today we are at Keenan's in North Wildwood, the Baseball Insider. Ricky, boy, do you love the shore feeling when you get down here, the summer and the beach and just kind of the vibe you get from all these shore towns?
It's almost the odd quietness you get at the beach. You hear the waves. Come on, there's nothing better than that.
Got my man Stanley Del Corio here, teaches at Margaret May School around here, lived here his whole life. People are more relaxed down here than they are in the city, aren't they?
Oh, it's definitely different than the city, that's for sure, yeah. You know, it is what it is. You come down here for the surf, the sand, some quiet time, go out, have a drink somewhere, and there's plenty of places to do that.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Are you kidding me?
All right. One of the guys that we've both known and heard about and talked about over the years has probably been here a couple times. He might have done all that and much, much more. He certainly has done much, much more than we ever thought he did, and produced a litany of responses from people all around the world, and that's Pete Rose right now, obviously. He made the comments on a show Billy Wardell and I did on WCHE about John Dowd. We had John Dowd on. He talked about 12 to 14-year-olds taken down to Florida. There was a deposition. A woman said she was 16 at the time. Pete Rose has sued. One thing led to another. The Phillies have basically canceled the portion of Alumni Weekend that was his. What momentum he had to get back into baseball is shot. I think the Phillies did the right thing and had to do what they did.
There's no doubt about it. And the way it was put out, I mean, if you saw the press release, it was Pete Rose saying, you know, I agree with what the Phillies have done. Yeah. And the Phillies didn't say anything yet to anybody. So you have to wonder, obviously, that was talked about right away. There was a phone call made and a decision was made rather quickly when you think about it. And it's the right move for the Phillies. The Phillies do not need those kind of problems. They do not need that kind of backlash, that's for sure. You know, you have to wonder if the team was doing really well, if it would have mattered, you never know. But the way the team's playing right now, I don't think you buy into that. And I think they did the right thing by not doing the Pete Rose Wall of Fame. And I don't think it'll ever come back.
No, I don't think it'll come back either. I got a two-part question very relevant to that. One, does Pete Rose stay with Fox? I can't see it happening, but want to know what you feel. And two, what's the cautionary tale here, the bigger picture? We see athletes or other people fall from grace. You take him as a role model, you take him as a hero, and then the human side of him shows more so in some than others. We can name 10 or 20 of them. But what's the cautionary tale about Pete Rose?
Oh, man. You know, I guess you look at Pete Rose, and I really believe that, you know, the gambling part was starting to wear off. Do you believe that?
Yeah,
I think it was starting to wear off, and I think at some point it would have been fine, you know, with the Hall of Fame. At some point, maybe a death might have done it, but I think now that never happens. I think now whatever was being swept under the rug is now being swept back onto the floor. That's the best way to put it. I don't think there's a shot anytime that he gets into the Hall of Fame now after these allegations. There's no way. And like I said, the Phillies aren't going to do it, and I don't think Major League Baseball will jump on that anytime.
Phillies probably thought back, you know, a few months ago, Pete Rose will certainly sell out one game, maybe a couple, bring a little goodwill to the team, bring a lot of alumni back to salute him. They're still going back. You going to be back Alumni Weekend?
I'm working. So
working Alumni Weekend.
I'll be there, but I'll be hanging out with my daughters more. You know, I'm sure most of the guys that are there this year are from the 80s team or when Pete was around. So, you know, you have your scattered after that. Leiby will probably be there, and Rael Cormier shows up every year. I'll probably see them in passing at some point. But, you know, it is what it is, and it'll still be a great weekend. I mean, they'll still have those guys on the field. You'll still have access to autographs from a lot of former Phillies. So that they've, you know, you do what you can. You change things up on the fly and move on, and the Phillies are doing that.
What do players think? I know players are like anybody else, and everybody's different, and everybody's got their own point of view, unique. But if there's a common theme among players, either older players who played with Pete or, you know, younger but not quite today's player or still younger and the guys who are playing today, do players have a view of Pete of why'd you do this to us or you were a great player, it didn't have to be that way, or are they angry at him? Do they respect him and just say, well, he's human like everybody else? What's the point of view among players?
Honestly, I think they still view him as human, but, you know, I have two daughters myself, and if that would have happened, I probably wouldn't have been too happy.
One of them is how old, Rick?
16. So yeah, you kind of get to a point where you're like, all right, enough of that. That's why I said if you're a human being and you hear these new allegations, there's no way you're voting him into the Hall of Fame, period. And after you already had baggage on top of it, there's no way. And I think the players will view that the same way. It's not like a lot of the players, the ex-players, have seen Pete. You know, they've seen him on TV, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you think he hasn't necessarily been around baseball games.
No.
As a matter of fact, I could tell you this much. I remember when I was playing and, you know, all the allegations about the gambling were already out and stuff. I didn't care about that. You know, you're gambling on game, you're not going to change my impression of how I'm going out and pitching.
But that's rule number one. The
right,
signs
it
in
is.
Every clubhouse.
It's definitely in the clubhouse, no gambling on baseball. But, I mean, I saw him at a fight, an Evander Holyfield fight. And I sat
sports.
Right behind him, which was the odd thing. And you know, he was really cordial, really nice. But, you know, these new allegations, they definitely changed my point of view on him.
Did you ever find that guys you played with, I mean, athletes are usually high-strung people.
Yeah.
Very successful, obviously, at a specific sport. Have a lot of money, have a lot of time, have youth. Is there something that is common to some? Tiger Woods, you see what he did. Obviously, OJ's a much different story. But you see certain guys abusing this, abusing that, haven't found this and that. Is there a tendency for athletes, do you think, to live on the edge, or is that just isolated?
I think it's isolated. I mean, think about how many athletes there actually are and how many few incidents there actually are. I know, like, Philly fans love to get on the Dallas Cowboys, but, I mean, you look at Lucky Whitehead.
Yeah.
He gets nailed for something. He wasn't even in that state.
No.
So, I mean, I think the microscope is on you in a sense. When you are playing, I don't think it's as much on you when you're done. I really don't. I mean, because there have been some guys that were so. I mean, you think of Derek Jeter. What do you even hear about Derek Jeter anymore?
Nothing. Just he might buy the Marlins,
right? But it disappears quickly.
He did that on purpose too. He wanted to fade away for a little while.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing for him.
Yeah,
and he's probably one of the biggest names in our era. You agree?
Oh, absolutely. Derek, shortstop for the Yankees for 20 years.
If he
won five World Championships.
If he could disagree or disappear like that. Anybody can.
Yep.
You know, and it just takes a little smarts, I guess, in the long run. I mean, everybody's going to have their problems. Everybody has issues. But, you know, I mean, if you can keep them to yourself, then I guess you're a step up on most people.
All right, lineup-wise, back to the Phillies and the Rockies at Coors Field today. 3-10 start Aaron Nola and Jeff Hoffman. What's the Phillies lineup look like, Rick?
Well, I'm pulling it up. You might have to wait about 3 seconds. One, two, and there it is. It'll be Cesar Hernandez leading off. He's playing second. Galvis will bat second at short. Daniel Nava is batting third. He's the first baseman. Nick Williams cleaning up in right
field.
Homer
last night, yep.
Oh, O'Double will bat fifth. He's in center. Michael Franco is sixth at third base. Kim will bat seventh.
And Kim left. Gets a start.
Yin-Soo Kim will be in left field batting seventh. Cameron Rupp will do the catching, and Aaron Nola is doing the pitching batting ninth. So not a lot of changes, but, I mean, the Phillies are kind of at the point where they can't make any changes.
Well, there's not much you can do until right. You start calling kids up. Pete Mackanin's team has lost five in a row. They go to Atlanta for an off day tomorrow, then two in Atlanta, then
you
the
know, I have something to ask you.
Yeah.
You watched the home series. They played decent baseball.
Yeah, real decent.
Did that start changing your mind about this team?
No.
Good, because it didn't change my mind at all. I just felt like every team hits a little bit
right.
of a hot streak.
Same
somewhere.
Way everybody goes into a slump, everybody goes gets hot.
Yeah, but it seems as though the Philly slumps have been like somebody drops a 50-pound weight on your head when they stop, because it pile drives you into the ground, and then all of a sudden you're back to a 5-game losing streak.
Well, the thing that drives me the craziest about this team, and there are plenty of things that drive me crazy, I like Pete Mackanin. I liked him when he came in here. This year, he just hadn't seemed to have the same radar for fundamentals. I know Odubel Herrera is a space cadet, and he may run through a stop sign and do something idiotic now and then.
Yeah.
He certainly can hit, and he's worth a lot of good to your team, too. But fundamentally, this team has been so bad this year. Where do you put the blame, and why all of a sudden?
You have to throw the blame pretty much everywhere. I don't think it's one thing. I mean, you could blame Pete. I blame Pete for a couple things. I look at it and say, well, this whole Odubel Herrera thing has been a mess from the get-go. This guy has not listened to authority at all. And Pete has come out and said, you know, Odubel's a little different. It's hard to get through to him. You know, I keep doing what I have to do or what I can do. Okay, that's fine. Well, what you can do is say you're not playing for a week.
Right.
You know, and if that becomes the case, then you do it. I mean, the problem is that we have a comparison. We have Charlie Manuel and Jimmy Rollins. Jimmy didn't run the bases, get off the
field.
And
Jimmy Rollins was a tenured veteran. Odubel Herrera is not, really.
And it's kind of funny, because the last time Odubel didn't run something out, Pete did not bench him until later on in the game, after the fact.
Yeah.
So what lesson are you really learning?
The way I look at it, Rick, as a guy who's a frustrated athlete like many of us are,
right.
You know, baseball is a sport in which you're not constantly moving like in basketball or hockey. It's not like football. The most somebody's going to ask you to run, assuming you don't run a lot defensively, we're talking about offensively, you're going to be asked to bust it four times a game if you're a good enough hitter to
right.
let that happen. And there's just no excuse that you can't do that at all. If you hit a lazy fly ball, what's the point of me running? He's not going to drop it. Maybe he is, and if he doesn't, you're in a little better shape than you were the other way. Why
you
can't guys do that?
You know what's so funny about this whole situation is that people will argue with me on Twitter and say, well, it was clearly an out. Is that the point? I mean,
no.
we saw it get to the point where I believe it was last night's game where Andres Blanco came around third base and stopped and was going to go to the dugout.
I've never seen that before.
What is really going on? And that's where you have to say it's a higher up. There's something else going on here, because, you know, Andres Blanco is a guy that usually runs everything out. He's barely clinging to this team right now. And I look at the situation and I say to myself, it's a simple thing. You run the bases. You get in the dugout, you hustle in defense, and that's it.
There's got to be accountability. We hear about the Cardinals and the Cardinal culture that seems to be around forever and ever, just to state one team. You never see that with the Cardinals. You never see it with a lot of other teams.
What other team do you see it with?
You see it with everybody once in a while.
I mean, you see it with Albert Pujols because he can't run.
Right.
I mean, besides that, I don't really see it. Here's a perfect example. I'm watching the game the other night against the Angels. We're at Comcast, and it is 7-0 Angels. Mike Trout is at bat.
All in the third inning, right?
This is about
the
sixth or seventh inning. Hits a ball to the right side of the infield, and he's out by a half a step. It's a half a step right to the second baseman. And I say to my first thing that I'm thinking is, that is an MVP.
Oh, yeah.
That is a guy that is the best in the league, and that is a guy who's busting his butt down to first base.
He doesn't have to.
He doesn't have to, but it's 7-0 in their favor, and he's still doing it.
That's why he's a great player as he is. Going to Mike Trout, when he hit the first of his two home runs against the Phillies this week, Todd Zielecki tweeted, there could be more of that in the future. And there are fans actually cheering in L.A., including the Philly fans that went there. Because he's obviously from Millville, big Carson Wentz fan. If I made the over-under at a half for the amount of games Mike Trout played as a Philly in the next 5 years, which way are you betting?
Over.
Really? Think that, he comes here with more years in his contract?
Oh, you said 5 years? Yeah. I'm going
ever, I would say yes.
I can't. No, I can't. I can't go there. Because I think what my comment was, I was asked this early in the week on Comcast, and I was asked, what are the percentages he ever plays for the Phillies? I said 75%. Because I don't necessarily think they're going to get him in that free agent year. I don't necessarily think that. It depends on how the Phillies are and what Mike Trout's willing to take. But I think at some point it's always nice to come home and play a year or two with your hometown team.
Wouldn't, when you played, if you were forced to take, it's a verb that doesn't really belong in the sentence, but you had to settle, let's say, for $35 million a year. Could you have lived that way?
that's a boatload more than I made in my career. So, yeah, I would have settled for that. This is where I think that the price is just way too high in Major League Baseball. I mean, who is really worth $33 million?
Well, it's not a one-player game. I mean, Mike Trout's been with the Angels 7 years. Doesn't really make that much of a difference.
Right.
Bryce Harper needs talent around him. You need talent around you in baseball. You have to pitch. You have to hit. You can only do one or the other, and no matter how great a hitter you are, if you're the only guy on your team, people are going to pitch around you. There's too many ways to ignore a player like that.
The one thing these prices have done is gotten fair-level markets for the relievers, the mid-relievers, the late relievers.
They're making big money,
not necessarily the closers. Yes, they're making...
Pat Neshek last night, our own in Denver.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. It turns into a little something different because... It's a trickle-down effect, and those guys get fair paid. I don't think the guys up top are fair paid.
That threw something into my mind, Rick. I got to ask you a question about Neshek last night.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, obviously, pitchers are at the whim of their defense and the like as far as your earned runs go and every other metric of the pitching that people are going to look at when they decide how much to pay at the end of the year, whenever your contract's up. Neshek's in. It's 8-4.
Yep.
They're giving him an inning against the Phillies. I don't think there was any coincidence. He's pitched four times since he got out there. You got to adjust to pitching.
He's given up runs in three.
And now he's you know, moving along. There's a base runner. And now, I can't remember who it was, hits a lazy fly ball to left field. I think it was Cesar.
Yeah.
With two outs. Andres Blanco's on third base. I mean, the absolute, if this is the can of corn that's ever been hit in Major League Baseball, and the Rockies just surround it and let it drop. If you're Pat Neshek, what are you doing on the mound? Are you just flipping out at that point?
I had that happen to me. I was with the Brewers, and believe it or not, I hadn't closed the game all year, and my first, whoever it was, had 2 days off, and I was closing.
Right.
And the first game is the last game of the series against the Phillies. So Pat Burrell's up with two outs. Jam him. He hits a routine, lazy fly to left field. Carlos Lee comes running in and just stops. And the ball's still up in the air. I'm like, what is he doing? The ball dropped, like, literally, I would say 4 feet in front of him.
No collision imminent and nothing?
Nothing. He just did not go after it. And I remember thinking to myself, what is he doing? Tomas Perez was the next hitter. I jammed him. Ball back to me. Got him out at first. We're going through the line. And Carlos Lee, I'll explain this afterwards, looks at me and he goes, don't be afraid to go 1-2-3. As a joke? That was it. Ned Yost was right behind me in the line. He just grabs me because he knew I was fuming. I said, did you hear that? Can you believe this guy? Blah, blah, blah. Because all he does is, quite frankly, Carlos Lee to me was not a good person. He's a good hitter, just not a good person.
Okay.
And here's a perfect story to jump with that.
Well, can we wait until after we get back?
Real quick.
All right.
Real quick. We're on a flight, all right, leaving Milwaukee, and he says, I need my Coca-Cola. And the flight attendant says, well, your charters, your sponsors are Pepsi, so you'll have to have a Pepsi problem. Why don't you get your butt into the terminal and get me a Coca-Cola?
He said that to the stewardess?
And that was it. That's all I have to say. Now you can go to break.
All right. Apparently Carlos Lee is not going to have a charter airline of his own.
No.
Major League Baseball players can be demanding. I've never heard exactly that one. Well, here at Keenan's, you can get whatever you want, whatever you want to eat, whatever you want to drink. We've got the Del Valle Senators watching us, some other people on a beautiful Sunday. This is the Baseball Insider, brought to you by SEPTA. Come on down to Keenan's, and 7 days a week, they'll have what you want to eat. They'll have what you want to drink. Great atmosphere, and we're going to be back with that atmosphere down the shore with the Baseball Insider final segment after this.
We now return to Keenan's in North Wildwood for the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. Now, here are your hosts, Paul Jolovitz and Ricky Batalico.
At Keenan's in North Wildwood, and pleased to be here. Also WBCB-TV, final segment. Jolly and Ricky both, thanks to John Brazier for letting me sit in. Ricky, do you remember a TV show? I think you're old enough to have watched this, called To Tell the Truth.
To Tell the Truth. I think I have. Yeah, and they have to guess which one's lying, and or actually the one that's real, right?
Right. There's two imposters and a real one. The two imposters have been briefed about this guy, so they're pretending they're him or her or whoever. I want to ask you this question. If Jared Eichhoff, version 2015 and 16, was contestant number one, Jared Eichhoff, version 2017, was number two, only two people this time. The game was To Tell the Truth, and I said the real Jared Eichhoff, at least baseball version, please stand up. Who's he closer to?
Oh, gosh. I still think it's mechanical, so I'll go to the 2016 Jared Eichhoff.
Because I watch him pitch, and for a couple innings, or he just gets it, and then all of a sudden, boom.
Who? This is the one that really ticks me off, because who is coaching him? What is going on? Perfect thing, Jolly, when you teach somebody to pitch, a straight line is the best way to home plate, right?
Well,
you see him spinning off every pitch?
Yeah.
Then somebody's not telling him this, because he's a major league pitcher. He's supposed to be able to make that adjustment. If he's not feeling it, he needs to be told by somebody.
You're the major league pitcher. You would know, absolutely.
And it's so visual that it's almost sickening that nobody's done anything about it.
Is that – I mean, I don't want to insult the guy. Obviously, we're not here to do that. But is that pretty much a duh for someone like Bob McClure?
It should be. It really should be. Some guys spin off a little bit, but there have been times where his whole body is going towards not even the first base dugout, towards first base. Number one, where do you get your control in that sense? You don't. Where do you get your velocity? You don't. Where do you get your downward plane? You don't. You take that all away, what do you have? You have what Jared Eichhoff's been doing this year.
Well, Jared Eichhoff's not the only one who's been very frustrating. I mean, Nick Pivetta and all these guys that are on the conveyor belt from Lehigh Valley may or may not be something.
I want to see Eflin back up. I think he's got the stuff. He's got the movement on his fastball.
He does.
You look at Pivetta, I think he still needs some seasoning, or maybe
needs
even
a secondary
isn't the
pitcher,
answer.
For sure.
Yeah, secondary is big. I mean, we've seen him blow through some innings like the other team's not even there.
Yep.
But his biggest problem is a blow-up inning. It just happened to be the first inning yesterday.
And Mark Koufax was able to come in and strike out nine.
Yeah, Mark Koufax strikes out 9-4 after that. But
well, to me, the biggest dilemma on the Phillies pitching staff, and I understand you, God gave you certain talents. It's not going to all come in one year. You're not going to be Clayton Kershaw or Pedro overnight.
Yeah.
But Vince Velasquez, nobody would argue. The biggest Philly hater on this planet would say Vince Velasquez has major league stuff.
Right.
If somebody gave you a half hour with Vince Velasquez, because you were that type of pitcher when you started your career, what would you tell him? Try to turn him from a thrower into a pitcher long term?
Don't be afraid of an 0-2 pitch. Don't be afraid of throwing a breaking ball that is a good quality breaking ball on an 0-2 pitch. Don't be afraid of a fastball on the outside part of the plate on an 0-2 pitch. The guy gets ahead of people. That's not the problem. The problem is putting them away. And I think he tries to get so fine, or he's got a mental block in his mind that I have to go to the top of the zone, see if they'll chase. Well, once you start doing that, other teams start to see that he's not going to throw it over the plate on 0-2. Or 1-2. He's going to try to make me bite at something. Oh, you know what? Sometimes the best pitch in the world could be a fastball on the outside part of the plate where they just have to protect, get yourself a little ground ball. I don't see that in Vince Velasquez right now. And I don't like his mentality of, well, sometimes I see myself as a late reliever. By the way, you have to throw strikes then too.
Right. Walking people is the one thing you can't do. He walked the ballpark Friday night. It drives me as a layman absolutely insane. I understand it's going to happen. Oh, everything's going to happen. Now and then, that's just the way life is.
Yeah.
But when you see continual 0-2 counts, when guys hit the ball to Ecuador, it drives me nuts. Has the amount of 0-2 home runs the Phillies have given up this year driven you crazy?
It is 0-2 hits, period, have driven me nuts. I mean, they're better than that. You know, if you're in AAA, you're better than that. Now, I will tell you this much, and I might have brought this up to you before, but when I was in the minor leagues, 0-2 pitches have had to be up and in, just so you knew how to throw inside. Now, obviously, the Phillies have gotten away from that in the minor leagues, and it's noticeable at the big league level. It's a very simple concept. Learn to throw inside when you're a minor leaguer it does not become foreign nature.
Is it organizational or individual? Is there an individual who could have that as his philosophy? They may not teach it to him, but he still does it.
I don't know who the individual was back then. I mean, it was just a thing we did. I would probably point to George Culver back when. He was a roving pitching instructor. So, I mean, I guess that would come from somebody like that. I mean, it's not a hard theory to throw out there. It's, hey, we got to start throwing inside on 0-2s.
There was a moment in last night's game. I don't know if you paid attention because it was 1 o'clock, whatever it was, Saturday night. The Phillies are getting bombed. Yeah, Nava hits a 3-run homer in the 8th inning to make it 8-4. And Pete brings in Hector Neris, who hadn't pitched since Monday. And he, I can't even remember how many people were on base. It doesn't matter. 3-2 count. He throws a ball. Absolutely, the Spalding guide fastball down Broadway at the knees. Umpire calls it a ball. I thought he was going to kill the umpire right there. I'm not sure I've seen a reaction like that in a long time. Do you know the pitch I'm talking about?
Yeah, but a lot of that is because you can't throw strikes beforehand.
Right.
It has nothing to do with that one solo pitch. The umpire's just surprised that you actually threw a pretty good pitch. and he zones out. And, oh, I missed it. My bad. Run. I mean, I'll tell you this much. I mean, umpires have been they're shaky. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
And I will tell you this much. I mean, it's kind of like it brings back memories of me pitching against the Braves when Maddox started a game and all of a sudden I come in later on and I'm not getting the same strike zone as him.
It's a veteran thing. It drives me crazy.
But you know it as a reliever because you're watching the game inside saying, wait a minute, I saw that pitch thrown there 7, 8, 10 times today. All of them strikes. I come in and throw it there, and it's not a strike all of a sudden. And that's when you have your little talk with the umpire.
Did they ever give you a clue, by the way? Sorry to interrupt you, but basketball refs interact with the coaches during the game, the players, and they can talk under their breath while you're not watching.
Frank Pulley was my favorite.
He'd tell you he missed a pitch right when he missed
it? Yes, he would. But he would also say – he'd say, come in and get a ball at the end of it or before the inning starts.
Yeah.
And you'd grab a ball and he'd be right next to, he'd be on the dirt in the batting area. And he'd look at me and he'd say, throw strikes. He'd look at the hitter, swing the bat. And that would be it. Cause you knew he wanted, let's go boys. You're swinging the bats.
What about that getaway day thing, Bo? we're getting a little kind of the esoteric areas of baseball as we get ready for the Phillies and the Rockies of course today. We've all heard getaway day and last day of a series. One team and the other team may have an off day. The umpires have to fly somewhere.
Yeah.
When it's 10-0 in the eighth inning, how significantly does the strike zone expand?
It should expand. It should expand a lot. I mean, quite frankly, I mean, there's guys giving up at bats at that point, unless it's right over the middle of the plate. You know, that's why a lot of teams like to keep the regulars in there because, you know what, if I put somebody in there that desperately needs an at-bat and he's getting an unfair strike zone, I think that's an unfair advantage.
Good way
period.
To put it, yeah.
So I think that's why you see a lot of guys that already have a ton of at-bats on the season in those games still. And it is what it is, though. I mean, somebody gets a big lead. Those guys know the game's over and they want to just get it over with. And let's face it, I think both sides are the same way. I've been in a game before early on in my career where I thought it was a ball on a 3-2 pitch, and it was called a strike. I'm like, oh, thanks. Let's just get out of here, you know.
Well, there's one pitcher that's had that happen to him a couple times on this trip who for a month was virtually unhittable and then gave up runs in 3 consecutive games. I think he lost one of them, Luis Garcia.
Yeah.
How hard is that to deal with when you're in an absolute zone, like Neshek was here, and then not only are you not in a zone, you can't get anybody out?
Well, the zones go both ways.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in a zone where you can't get anybody out, then you're in a zone where you get everybody out. It just happens. I mean, and I think he kind of brought that one along himself, throwing the ball to the backstop. I mean, I don't think he was executing his pitches, so I blame that on the pitcher. Is it hard to get over? No. You know what? That's why you're a reliever. You're supposed to forget about what just happened an hour later and then just move on.
Two of these 5 games, Ricky, the Phillies had the lead in the bottom of the 8th inning, giving the game away and then not scoring the 9th.
Yeah, well, it's a 9-inning game.
It is a 9-inning game.
And I'm sick of people telling me, well, they lose a lot of 1-run games. Well, that tells me they're a bad team.
Ricky, if I heard every time, and I have nothing against Scott or Larry, I love him. I like the way Tom does.
Another one-run loss.
It is what it is. I mean, you lose 1-run games, that means you're not very good. It's not like a complete shock that somebody flipped a coin.
Last time I checked, losing by 1 or losing by 15, it counts as 1-L.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you lose 27 or 28 of them, that says something about your bullpen. That says something about your team. I wouldn't expect a 39 and 69 team to have more 1-run victories than losses.
Right. That's the whole point.
Right.
But people will say we're that close. No, you're not. Because that's actually 2 runs you have to make up, not 1.
All right.
One just ties it.
as we're heading into August here on August 6th, give me one or two teams that could just jump up and surprise people the rest of the way. The Indians maybe for me.
The Indians always. Because for some reason, they seem to be a very good team in August and September. So, yeah, obviously, they're a team that could jump up on somebody. I think that American League East is still kind of up in arms. I mean, you look at the Red Sox, they can't figure it out for a long period of time. When the Yankees get going, they seem to hit a pitfall. So, I mean, I think that's still anybody's race up there. You know, you look at the West, forget about it.
Astros.
Let me ask you this. Astros are walking away. Dodgers are walking away in the West. I mean,
the Nationals. Let me ask you about the Aaron Judge and the – because this happened to Bobby Abreu years ago, and Bobby Abreu basically attributed his second-half dive to the home run derby.
Said, I agree.
What about Aaron Judge? Aaron Judge hits the ball to all fields, which he did at the home run derby. He's hitting 330, but he's probably not a 330 hitter. Comes to the All-Star break, puts on a show, and basically since then doesn't have a hit.
It ruins your swing, regardless of what you
think.
How
can you not just change it back with it? Why can't guys do that?
It's not that easy. I mean, it's a lot of swings they're taking, and they're not looking to hit base hits. They're just
so why do we have a home run derby?
It shouldn't be there. It's for the fans.
It is for the fans, but if it's taking some of the best players in the sport and turning them into junior Kichikato.
It's for the fans, and that's why they should deny doing it when it comes up.
All right, because Bryce Harper's going to have to do it next year in Washington. Nice for the Phils to see him have a problem with
this.
There you
go. It would be nice.
All right, it's been a blast, buddy. Thank you so much. This is a great place, Keenan's. Come eat, come drink, come have fun. You're down the shore. It's the summer. It's a wonderful place. Keenan's in North Wildwood. Got some people to thank here. Bob Giaquino, our engineer, thank you very much. His brother, Chris Giaquino, WBCB-TV, appreciate it. Jack Urban back at the station. As always, I want to thank Merrill Reese, Matt Meir, and everybody at WBCB for doing this. I want to thank John Brazier for letting me sit in. This is Paul Jolivis, along with Ricky Metallico, saying goodbye from SEPTA. This has been the goodbye from Keenan's, rather. This has been the Baseball Insiders, presented by SEPTA. There we go. Have fun.
You've been listening to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA, an exclusive presentation of 1490 AM WBCB, and heard around the world at WBCB1490.com.